such a nice meeting. So what I'm going to be talking today is about one of the models which has been very popular recently as a potential explanation for the dark energy problem in cosmology, namely the F of R modification of gravity. Unfortunately, I think the result of my talk is that it just doesn't work. And I'll explain why. So the primary driver for all these things going on with modification of gravity is, of course, the cosmology. And although we seem to know quite well what we are doing, both on theory and experimental size, the result of our efforts can be summarized by this pi diagram. So we basically don't know what most of the universe is made of. So we have a cake, but we're not quite sure what it's made of and whether we should eat it, or if so, how. So this motivates, of course, a lot of effort. And one of the ideas that is appears in this thinking about the dark energy problem, since it seems to be a really weird matter component, maybe we just don't understand what the gravity is doing, and maybe we should be thinking about modifying gravity. So one of these modifications of Einstein gravity, which have been around for a long time, is the so-called F of R gravity model. So it's essentially trivial modification, well, not trivial, but very straightforward modification of the Einstein-Hilbert action, where you take the gravitational path of the action, where there should be curvature over 16 pi g in the Einstein-Hilbert action, and you replace a scalar curvature with the arbitrary function of the scalar curvature. And you can explore this theory. Well, modification of this sort appear very naturally as a result of quantum effects in effective action approach. And in cosmology, this has been studied for quite a while. These models of this kind appeared in the Stravinsky seminal paper in 1980. And the models of this sort were appearing in the literature even before that, but that's outside my cosmological horizon. So, but this is the high energy modification of the gravity. So the effect of this R squared term, which you can add to curvature, appears to matter when the curvature becomes large. Well, large compared to what? Large compared to this scale M, which is dimensionful pointing here, and usually in quantum, from quantum field theory, you get something like mass Planck here with some coefficient. So these terms appear at the ultraviolet, they modify the theory, they are practically useful for cosmology. You can, for example, drive inflation with this, term, as Stravinsky did. But it's not what we wanted to do if we want to talk about the dark energy. So if you want to do tackle dark energy with this approach, what you need to do is you need to modify the F of R function in the infrared. That is, change it when the curvatures are low, comparable to the present day of cosmological constant. And one of the first attempts were basically to add the term which will blow up at R equals zero. So to the usual curvature R, you add or rather subtract the term which goes like 1 over R. Of course, you also need to have dimensionful quantity there. And that dimensionful quantity sets the scale at which you modify, modify the solution. So it's has the units of mass, and essentially we're talking about very, very small mass corresponding to the wavelength of the size of the universe. So unfortunately, this simple model has a lot of problems. First of all, you lose Minkowski solution as your solution in these models. This might not be such a bad thing, but it certainly gives pause when you talk about theories which don't have the flat space-time in their limit. But it also has bigger problems. It's just linearly unstable. So to make sense of these models with F of R, the theory has to be linearly stable. If I perturb from my certain solution, I better not have my perturbations growing. And there are basically two conditions you need to satisfy right away before you even go further and do all this complicated cosmological fitting to parameters. Is that, first of all, your gravity better behave like an attractive force. That basically means that the derivative of this function f in the action should be positive. And second of all, if you make excitations about it, they better be not tachyonic. that basically says that the second derivative of this function should be also positive. As you can see, the second derivative of this guy is negative. So this basically means that you have a tachyon in there, and it can go and decay really, really, really fast inside the matter. Okay, but this was the beginning. And of course, if you give series free rein, they will avoid all the problems you pose in front of them. And after a somewhat rocky start with these first models, people found a bunch of models which avoided all the linear stability constraints, all the solar test constraints. And I listed some of them here. For example, Husin-Savitsky model, the Strabinsky model, and there is a bunch of other designer type models where you just pick a function f of r so that it works. And people have placed significant confidence in this to actually study how large-scale structure grows in these models in detail. So, for example, in the papers of my collaborator, Leon Pogosyan and Sandra Silvestri. But all of this has been very actively developed in the last few years, but there has always been a cloud of suspicion that, and a little bit of hint that something is not quite right. So it periodically, well, it one would periodically run into problems when analyzing these models. For example, this is a graph from the paper by Shinji Tsujikawa. If you take this model, like f of r, and cook up the function f of r so it reproduces the correct cosmological expansion fitting a supernova data, and fix the conditions at the current stage for the curvature and its derivative in time, and try to trace your model back into the past, suddenly you find that your curvature perturbation, which you thought is small, well, it's growing, 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 and which is not surprising because you're going into the past in the denser medium. But at some point, at about redshift 30, it just blows up. And the blow up is accompanied by the wild oscillations of this perturbation. So something quite not right is here. And that's not the only paper that sees this. Appleby and Batey also put the paper out with essentially the same type of blowing up behavior. And Strabinsky in his model also notices there are growing oscillations. So something seems to be amiss in this problem. So I figured I'd take a look at this. What happened is actually the problem is much deeper than I thought it's going to be. And that's what I'm going to explain in my talk. It looks like this f of r dark energy models just generically don't work. And the reason for this is very simple and very robust. Essentially, what you're doing when you're trying to modify the f of r model in infrared limit is you're screwing up your ultraviolet part of the theory. So if you're talking about the curvature, well, you have about 60 orders of magnitude in curvature values from the size of the inverse size of the universe and inverse mass Planck squared. But when you do infrared modifications like this, f of r, say, r minus mu to the fourth over r, what is the dynamical degree of freedom that appears in your theory? It's not the curvature, but rather a function of curvature. And unfortunately for you, it's the function of curvature like this. It's mu over the fourth over r squared. So what you did is you've taken this big interval of curvature from infrared values to ultraviolet values, and you compress it to the tiny interval of in dimensionless quantity phi of order one in length. So all the curvature in the large limit just gets mapped epsilon close to zero in this transformation. And this puts the singularity, the place where the curvature is infinitely large, right next where you live. And that causes all sorts of problems. So that's the basic idea. And from this point on, I'm going to launch into writing formulas. So if you're going to fall asleep, that's probably a good point. So to figure out what exactly going on, we need to understand the dynamics, degrees of freedom in this model. And to do this, I have to write some formulas. So let's see, how do we derive equations of motion? Well, in the usual way, I already shown you the action of this model. So to get the equations of motion, we just need to vary it with respect to the metric. Well, there is a subtle point that in equations of this sort, you get a slightly different answer if you vary this as a metric theory or rather metric and connection theory. But let's talk about just metric theory of FFR. So if I do this, instead of Einstein equations, which we all know, I get a higher order equation. It still looks kind of like Einstein equations. I get R mu on the left hand side, T mu on the right hand side. But there is also all these derivatives of function F, which itself is a function of curvature. So I have second derivatives of F in form of this F mu and box of F prime. So curvature has two derivatives in it of the metric. So these guys, like this and this, has fourth derivatives of the metric in there. So this is higher derivative theory of gravity. But if you look at it long enough, you'll realize that essentially what happens is there is a new scalar degree of freedom appearing. As I said, it's a function of curvature. And the evolution of this scalar degree of freedom is governed by trace of these equations. So if I take the trace of these equations, well, a lot of my second order derivatives contract. So I end up with the equation which looks like a usual box phi equation. So I have box, which is just a wave operator of F prime, is equal to some function of curvature plus trace of stress energy tensor. So this looks remarkably like a scalar field equation. And I can make it very explicit if I just identify new scalar variable by saying that I introduce new letter phi, which is just F prime minus one. And I've chosen the minus one so that if F is just R, then I get zero for this guy. Okay, so once I do this and identify this degree of freedom, which is just a scalar function, and it's related directly related to curvature, there is just transformation between the curvature values and the values of this function, then I can realize that this equation, actually, which is fourth order equation, can be split into two second order differential equations. This is the same trick as you do with standard second order differential equations when you want to numerically integrate them, you just split them out with two first order equations, like equation for the derivative of the coordinate and the derivative of the momentum. And this will make the theory quite like a theory of Einstein gravity with weird matter coupling, which includes this function of phi, and the scalar field. So let's take a look at the scalar field equations of motion, because this is what turns out to dominate the dynamics. So the equations for the metric, which are like Einstein equations, essentially follow the dynamics of the scalar degree of freedom, as it usually happens in GR as well. So this equation looks exactly like scalar field equation. In fact, I can write it down in the form which we all know and love by introducing this derivative of the potential of phi. So I can write it as a box phi is equal to derivative of the potential. The only difference from the normal scalar field is that this scalar degree of freedom in FFR theory, sometimes it's called the scalaron, is directly sourced by the fourth term, which is the trace of the stress energy tensor. So if I have something like a perfect fluid, the trace of the stress energy tensor will be just rho minus 3p. So if I have dust, it will be just the density of this dust. Now, what about this potential? Well, I know its derivative. It's just this 2f minus f prime over like r. So I can easily integrate it and just plot this potential. It's a little bit tricky to do in terms of phi because usually you end up with some sort of nonlinear function for f of r. So inverting, it might involve so difficult things like solving cubic equations, which are just too hard. So, but there is an easier way to obtain it just in parametric form. I can easily calculate the derivative of it with respect to the curvature. And that is usually just a polynomial or some sort of rational function. It's easy to integrate. So that's a very general setup. That's what's going on with the degrees of freedom in the system. So let's see what happens in some particular model. And I'm going to focus on the Stravinsky's model because it's quite well, quite carefully constructed to avoid all the known constraints about it. But it turns out it also has a problem. So when I do this, well, first of all, Stravinsky model has a function f of r, which is the usual r, plus some term which is constructed so it goes away when the curvature is large. And you just end up with the normal Einstein-like gravity, well, term in the action. But when the r is small, there is some modification. So degree of freedom that evolves here is this. It's curvature over 1 plus r squared squared. So all these functions are nice, and they don't go and blow up at r equals zero as the very early models did. So everything seems in order. And you also can calculate all the linear stability conditions, and they're also fine. So you plot the potential, it looks like this. It kind of has a lot of features, but this has to do with this transformation is actually multi-valued. Well, first of all, you notice that the value of the field phi for r equals zero is zero, but it also goes to zero when R is large. So you have three branches on this potential. So let me walk out through the interesting paths on this graph. So starting out from the very beginning at point A, this is singularity with large positive curvature. You go in to point B, and that's a de Sitter minimum on this potential. It's a positive stable, a positive cosmological constant stable solution. That's where we're supposed to be asymptoting to right now, even as we speak in the cosmology. Now, there is also unstable de Sitter maximum in this, yes? So that's the value of this potential. This is the value of this field phi. And the field phi, I remind you, since it's a derivative of the function of f, it's dimensionless because both the argument and the function have the same dimension. Okay, so there is also a branching point. That's where the second derivative of f goes to zero. And you have to, if you cross this point, you'll end up on the other branch, which can lead you to the flat space-time, which is a solution in this model, but unstable. And there is a second branch, and if you cross that, you end up with a point which is negative singularity here. So all of this is nice and makes a pretty picture, but it's mostly relevant for our cosmology, because when we talking about cosmology, we live somewhere between initial singularity and the current or future asymptotic de Sitter space-time. So we live somewhere here on the region between A and B on this diagram. So let me blow it up, because all of it also looks pretty, doesn't have anything, well, much to do with what I'm talking about. Okay, so this is, when I blow it up, this is how it looks like. There is a maximum at some finite value of the field, and the first thing you notice it, the curvature singularity, which happens at the value of the field phi equal to zero, when I look at it, I actually notice that my potential just goes to the finite point there. So what's going on? I have my infinite curvature, but it's a finite distance away from the asymptotic de Sitter vacuum, both in the separation and, what's worse, in the potential energy value. So this already seems very suspicious. You know from mechanics that if you have things at finite distance away from you by kicking stuff around, you should be able to go there. Now, actually, if you look at it, you will see a little bit closer, you will see that the approach is kind of steep at the end. So it turns out it has a singularity there, but it's a square root type singularity. So the derivative blows up, but not the potential energy. And it's very generic for these models. The way it works, well, I can just write down the model for f of r, which goes to some sort of 1 over r expansion in the end, in the limit of the large curvatures. So I recover something which looks like Einstein action. And I can calculate what my degree of freedom is. It's really 1 over r to some power. I can calculate what my derivative of the potential is. It's also 1 over r to the same power. So I end up with the potential of phi once I integrate this and switch over variables from r to phi, which is some sort of very big power law singularity, with the power exponent being just related to the exponent of the first term here by alpha over alpha plus 1. For Stravinsky model, the first term is 1 over r squared, since everything was written 1 over squared. So you get like two-thirds type, two-thirds type singularity. So, and you look at it and you realize that, well, actually, the closer you make it to the Einstein gravity in the function of f of r, the actually smoother the singularity is. Well, so this doesn't look too good, but it's actually not quite obvious that we're going to go there. And in principle, you can say, well, if my field is not coupled to anything, then I'll never go to there, I'll just sit in my minimum, and all is nice and well. Unfortunately for us, this field is directly sourced by the density of the matter. So it basically means by manipulating matter, we are free to apply any force we want on this field pretty much within reason. And this basically means we can dominate the field dynamics by essentially doing manipulations with the matter. I have to remind you that in all this infrared type modification models, the scale of this potential is in units of infrared curvature. Think about cosmological constant. This is very, very, very low density. So any realistic matter density is going to be orders of magnitude more than this scale of the potential. So what happens if I add matter? Well, the matter is a force term in this equation. If I have positive energy density matter, it pushes me to the right of this potential, to the region of larger curvatures, the same way it does in Einstein theory. And if I have high enough matter content, I might suspect that things can go wrong and I can push myself off to the end point of this potential, and then I'm just dead. Well, and the easy way to visualize that is if you talk about effective potential language about this. Well, if I have constant matter distribution, it's the same as adding a linear term to the field phi, with the coefficient being the force term. So if I do this and add the force term of order one, that is cosmological, the density of order of cosmological constant now, this is what happens to the potential. It gets tilted, the minimum shifts to the right, and this thing goes down. Now this is just the force term of order of one. Realistically, we have like this force term which can be orders of magnitude bigger. So if I actually plot it to scale, I'll never see this minimum. It's so small, it's invisible. So I have this tiny hook at the end of this effective potential, and that's the minimum where I'm supposed to be living. And that's the minimum where people are doing perturbation analysis for the growth of structure. This looks really scary to me. Like, I'm essentially expanding in a Taylor series, epsilon away from singularity. This looks suspicious. It's not saying that you get like wildly wrong results. Things have like certain persistence of, like independently of doing the calculation, you might still get the right result. But the whole idea of doing linear expansion near this potential seems very suspicious. Anyway, so let's press on. So you might think that, well, actually I have these other equations which replace Einstein equations and they'll solve the problem, right? So maybe they're so stiff that they don't want to go in this region. But it's not really the case. Well, let me write down the equations for cosmology case, but it's a nice symmetrical solution. I have a flat metric which is expanding in time, so it's really ordinary differential equation type problem. And if I do this, I can easily write down my scalar degree of freedom equation. An equation for it looks exactly like a usual scalar field equation with the force term on the right-hand side. But the Friedman equation, that is a zero-zero component of the those equations, looks kind of weird. If you look at it, it has, well, explicitly second derivative of A in here, and also these terms which contain implicitly the third derivatives of scale factor. So this caused a little bit of confusion in the literature, I think, and people were thinking that, well, maybe this is a dynamical equation of evolution for A, so maybe I should treat it as a second order differential equation. But then if you try to do this, the coefficient actually goes singular on u in front of the main term, so numerically it wasn't so good. But the reason for all of this is very simple. It's actually, we should really be eliminating this scalar degree of freedom to make it a second order equation. So if I eliminate A double dot in this equation in favor of the curvature, which of course contains the second order of the derivative, they end up with equation which look exactly like a Friedman equation with some extra terms which are manifestly going to disappear when you close to Einstein limit. So you end up with just Hubble is equal some stuff which is logarithmic derivative of the F prime. And remember, F prime is just my scalar degree of freedom of phi. And there is some function of the scalar degree of freedom of phi again, and this is, again, some function of the scalar degree of freedom. If I'm close to Einstein, then F prime is almost one. This guy goes away, it's zero. This guy is one, this guy goes away. So I get the Hubble equation back in the regions of large curvature. So there is nothing really bad happening to the metric evolution. It's just that this scalar degree of freedom applies really nonlinear transformation to the curvature function. So if you're thinking about this maybe in terms of the conformal transformation to Einstein frame, I suspect that basically the conformal transformation you will find will go really bad on you when you do this one over R thing. Anyway, but I'd rather have it in the Jordan frame because then the matter to the coupling to the matter is straightforward and I get the usual intuition. Hmm? Okay, yeah, I'm basically tidying up. So, anyway, mechanical analogy of this is a ball in the ball, right? So, you can balance it with arbitrary force at the edge, but you're close to the edge. You know, if you give it kinetic energy, it will fly out. So, and that basically explains what's going on with cosmology, right? I was going back in time, I had my anti-friction from the Hubble term, I was increasing in kinetic energy, and I just flew out of the potential here. And there is even bigger problem, which I'm not going to go too much into it, but if you look for the spherically symmetric static configurations of the matter, it's very easy to end up with a singularity in the center. If you look at this equation, and I already argued that the potential term is finite and very small, then this equation, if I drop the nonlinear potential, looks remarkably like a Newtonian potential equation. So I can very easily estimate the displacement of this scalar degree of freedom in the center of the body. And it's just minus 2/3 of the depth of the Newtonian potential. But unlike the Newtonian potential, which has to go to infinity to blow up or go to minus 1/2 to create a horizon, this guy just has to go very small displacement between its asymptotic value in the de-Sitter and the curvature. And then it will blow up. So if I increase the compactness of my body, eventually I'll get to the point where I cross this curvature singularity and I will have a naked singularity in the center of the object. That's not good because we have compact objects like neutron stars around. So that's pretty much the end of my talk. So if you ask the question, is F of R dark energy is dead? Well, I cannot really quite kill it yet because there is a little bit of parametric space. You can weasel your way around and try to make this separation just large enough so you don't form a neutron star, a singularity inside the neutron star, but then you have all these complicated hydrodynamical equations. But the problem itself looks quite serious enough. And we better understand what's going on here if you want these models for cosmology. And that's it. It's not me, it's not me. Yeah. Okay, fine, you don't end up with infinite curvature, you end up with large finite one, right? I looked at it. It's very robust. Essentially, what you do, you overshoot all your general relativistic range because it's compressed to epsilon, and you end up on R squared dominated branch of it. So essentially, you go from infrared straight into quantum gravity path. So it's we can discuss it offline, but yeah, it doesn't solve the problem at all. Okay, the sun has gravitational potential of about 10 to the minus 6. I'm talking about compact objects here. So sun might be fine. I can adjust my things when the kinetic terms are very small, but I know that they're going to be large when I'm talking about the compact objects. Well, if they integrated, if they were to integrate it from the center of the neutron star, then I suspect they will see trouble. They just didn't do it. Yes, so you're thinking about outside of the objects, right? Yes, so you basically end up with something like Brunt-Dickey there, so you have to avoid all these fifth force constraints and solar system constraints. So people are trying to do this, and you can kind of rigidly try to make this degree of freedom non-dynamical, essentially, at these scales. But even if you manage to do this and you avoid these constraints, you will still end up with this problem. This is nonlinear, and essentially when you type it in down in the linear regime, you still have this problem. And there is compact objects around, like astrophysical ones. So if they were dead in the theory or require some sort of quantum gravity modifications to survive, I'd rather have my neutron stars than this model. But that's just my preference or prejudice.